This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to put your predictions to the test? With Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on key economic and climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. Like, for example, will the change in the U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.6%? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, buy a yes contract. If you don't, buy a no. It's that easy. Contracts cost 2 to 99 cents. Correct predictions earn $1 at settlement, and incorrect predictions, well, they settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus you earn 4.08% APY on your investment with an incentive coupon. Visit ibkr.com/forecast and make your predictions today. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
What goes up? Well, sometimes goes down too. Heading into the fat part of the end of year with seasonality at our back. An update on the chili cook-off, and our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 896 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Almost there, almost eating that juicy turkey, the stuffing, the potatoes, the cranberry sauce. I hope you have fun on your Thanksgiving, not one of those dinners with family that becomes just havoc-ridden and problematic. Always a good time at the Horowitz house. Still, at this point, undecided if we're going to spatchcock the turkey or traditional, just bake it off, or maybe even smoke it. I never actually fried a turkey. I've eaten my share of them, but it seems like every time I think about frying a turkey, it seems like a terrible mess. And what am I going to do with all that oil afterwards anyway? Hopefully you're going to do one of the above and have a great time on your Thanksgiving. But let's be thankful right now for all the things that the market has given us this year. Well, actually, and last year too, right? And when there's, you know, we've seen this 20% back-to-back years. By the way, that's very rare. You don't see them very often. 20% back-to-back years for markets, hardly ever been, only a couple of them in history. And 3 years, if we're going to have a third year in a row, not really highly likely. That doesn't mean it can't be a good year, but the odds are in the favor of giving some back after we get through all the excitement of what could be with a full Republican sweep, a full Republican government in the House and the Senate and in, of course, the White House. This is something we talked about, those quadrants that are very interesting. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time today talking about things because, you know, we have a great guest. And that guest, Frank Curzio, you know what happens when Frank and I get together. We can yak-a-doodle. We can chat and talk and just go in all sorts of directions. And I want to leave plenty of time because we try to keep this to about an hour each episode. I want to keep plenty of time for that discussion because we get to a nonstop talk fest when we're together. And I have a long list I'm looking at right now of things on my list that I want to talk about with Frank. So to make sure we do that, we're going to get right there. Let me do a quick introduction. Frank is an equity analyst. He's had more than 3 decades of experience covering small and mid-cap stocks. He's been the editor of several well-respected newsletters with major companies, as well as the top performers on thestreet.com, where he significantly outperformed the markets during his tenure. He was also the research analyst for Jim Cramer, if you didn't know that. He is the host of Wall Street Unplugged And he's been on all sorts of TV, and he's written about. He's got one of the top risk-adjusted performance for newsletters with Holbert's Financial Digest. What else can I say? And our guest today is Frank Curzio, you know, all the way from Curzio land. He's a great friend. He's a great, just a guest, and probably the favorite guest of everybody out there. Frank, did you know that?
Hello. I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you say that to all your guests? I think I heard that a couple times.
No. Seriously.
You are
top of the, you're top of the list of, the only complaint I get about Frank Curzio is that when he's on, and you and I get going, they got to slow the podcast speed down.
Yeah, I get that. I get that sometimes. Yep, talk too fast. I get that all the time. You talk too fast, talk too fast. I'm like, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, got to get the words out. And not only that, you're getting
everything in.
You're getting 2 hours worth of a podcast in 1 hour.
Exactly. There you go. See, the math works. That's what we're good at here.
So there's two things that you asked me about recently offline. I'll just bring it up right now. Number one, you want to know how I finished in the chili cook-off.
Exactly. How'd you do?
Third place this year.
Third place? Was it rigged?
Well, I actually, since I won the last 2 years and then I came in second in the members' favorites and all this, I said, let me change this way up. And I went with an Asian-inspired kind of Korean chili. The beans were edamame. It was an unbelievable presentation with homemade kimchi and sauces and stuff. But I wasn't expecting to win.
Wow. So you won the last 2 years prior?
Yeah.
Did you donate to this organization at all? It's a big place, big in that ranking.
Oh, that's nice. And I'm heading next week to Guatemala fishing. You asked me when the next time I'm going fishing. We're going for billfish and tuna. So that's next week. Yeah.
Cool.
But let's talk about you, because it's all about you, Frank. It's all about you, Frank.
I want your life, man.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Chili and fishing and going away all the time. Are you kidding me? Holy cow.
I got my rump squarely in my chair for an unbelievable amount of hours per week. So I don't know if you want that totally. but let's talk about this. Let's start the discussion. Let's talk about the big picture, top down, you know, the bird's eye view, the 20,000 feet up, looking down like we were a drone over, pick your area these days. Let's start with the two E's, the earnings and economics, earnings season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not bad. Matter of fact, I would say, you know, on par with other earnings seasons, 8% growth, generally speaking, that's what they had looking for. 5% plus minus beat on EPS. Earnings came in pretty strong. A lot of that's because of pricing. Companies have done well with their margins. I mean, what do we have anything bad to say about earnings season?
Not really. I mean, I like seeing separation where, you know, everyone looks at the S&P 500 as, you know, is the market's going higher? I don't know if the market's going higher. I just know that I am finding ideas within it, right? So I don't know where the market's going. Maybe we go 3% from here and you know, we're up a lot from the Trump bump and stuff like that. And we were already a little expensive, but there's a lot of names that I'm finding, especially small caps, are really good. They've underperformed considerably, even large caps. You know, some of these names that I like that look great, that are putting up good earnings, and people just looking at P's and say they're expensive, but they keep putting on very strong earnings. So, you know, you can't just look at a P and see it at 30 times earnings and say it's expensive without looking at the growth, right? I mean, at 10 PE could be expensive if you're not growing earnings, you're not expected to grow earnings for 5-6 years, which we kind of saw at Disney for a long time. But yeah, overall, I'm finding some ideas and, you know, I'm bullish on, you know, just some of the ideas and a little bit bullish on the markets, just because we're in a market where it's hard to bet against a market where earnings are growing and the Fed is probably most likely going to continue lower rates into next year, at least by 1%, I think by the year end next year. And I think, you know, people are worried where we're seeing the long rates of 10-year go higher as they cut 50 basis points. I mean, what define higher? I mean, we're at 4.3. We're at like 12%. 13%. Like, people forget, you know, like, it's not a crazy rate. And yes, interest rates are going higher. Yes, we have a lot of debt, but we'll see those cracks, right? I mean, we see those cracks with spreads, which are fine. You know, everyone's talking about commercial real estate, and banks have done a great job managing that because they're getting ahead of it and, you know, working out deals with the customers and stuff. So, you know, we're not really seeing a lot of cracks in terms of debt, and everyone's talking about, oh my God, these enormous payments. But overall, you know, question about the markets when it comes to earnings were good, and it's hard to bet against, you know, a market that's seeing stronger earnings when you expected, you know, interest rates supposed to come down at least for the next 12 months.
Yeah, you talk about small caps. When I think about small caps, one of the reasons that we saw the lagging for some time, small caps, when you look at things like the S&P 600 or the Russell 2000, which make up couple of different indices that are related to small caps. Inside of there is a chunk of energy and financials, a big chunk, right? And what's really fascinating there is that we knew that small caps were lagging. It was like, you know, what's going on here? Big reason was that as interest rates were coming up, it was okay to a degree for some of the major banks out there. Mm-hmm. But the problem was the yield curve really did not benefit the smaller financials. And when all of a sudden things turned around and deregulation talk started, which we're going to get to in a minute about the Trump trade, but the deregulation talk and all that really, I mean, the day of the election, small caps were up like 5.5%. Because finally people said, okay, I'll bite.
I don't know if it's so much on bite that they've underperformed. And you have to look, consider this with gold as well, right? I mean, why buy gold? And a lot of companies aren't seeing like the funding that they'll get in the gold industry. Even though you say, well, gold, the price of gold is at its all-time high. How come the companies aren't doing better? And they're not getting financing, some of these companies, is when other things are working, when you could buy the seven biggest companies, which are safe havens of the world, basically. And then some of them are not really that expensive. I'm not talking about, you know, Tesla's expensive and definitely Trump bumped there. But some of these names, I mean, they're just growing tremendously in the right areas. They're generating so much free cash flow. I mean, they spend, I mean, we're looking at two companies that are in streaming, and I don't even think they know they're in streaming. It's like a blip, right? When it looks at Apple and you know,
Amazon,
right? I mean, it's like their fifth business line, right? And yet Disney, that's their whole business line struggling. And that's who their competitors are, who would throw billions into this. Like, oh yeah, we got to put another billion into that, like nothing. So yeah, it is crazy when you look at it, but when you could put money into those stocks and they're going up 20% a year, you know, why even bother with small caps? But now you've seen a lot of the stock prices for some of these things. Apple, if you look, you know, four months, maybe 5 months where the stock price hasn't really moved. You know, now Tesla is obviously taking a lead, but and some of these names have, but yeah, there's a lot of room for growth in small caps. And now you have an environment, like I explained, which is very favorable, where you have Trump won, favorable for regulation, more M&A, which is great. You have more risk on market, and then you have, you know, lower interest rates, which are good. And remember when you said those components within the S&P 600 and the Russell, whether they're banking and oil, there's 40% of them that don't make any money either. So people are looking at the Russell saying small caps are terrible. They suck. They underperformed. Same what I said before with the S&P 500. Instead of looking at the Russell, what we do is look at individual names, courtesy of research, and we're finding lots of really cool names that have done incredible for us because, you know, if you're including the whole entire index, and it's when you're looking at the Russell too, and I know you know this, but I don't know if your audience does, Andrew, where they only rebalance once a year. And I think it's around June. So meaning if a company goes in there and say it comes in with a $200 million market cap and it goes to, and there's companies have gone to 20, 30 billion, they represent a large percentage
of that
for a full year. And if companies go bankrupt, they're actually a bankrupt. But if they're close to bankrupt, they remain in there as well as a small percentage. And then they rebalance. So a lot of those bigger names account for a big portion of it. And a lot of the smaller names may underperform. So it's not like I don't want to say it's a, the S&P 600 is a little bit better of kind of, you know, a benchmark for small caps, but I just don't like the Russell 2000 that's the benchmark because there's so much garbage within it. It's kind of like the Dow being a price weighted index, which is kind of meaningless, right?
Yeah, I agree. Well, these days it's become a technology index these days. And market cap weighting is a different problem in my opinion also. I mean, equal weighting really is a really interesting newer way to look at things because of the fact that how quickly things move up and how quickly they can become the dominant force inside of these indices that we're all benchmarking. And then what happens? We all benchmark towards it, right? Then we all buy into it and the bigger companies get bigger and then the dominance becomes even bigger and more overwhelming.
And even with the Dow, when the market went up after Trump won, I forgot, I think it was like 1,200 points. Don't quote me on that. But when it went up, I believe it was around 1,200 points. And I didn't know this, and I was surprised to see this. About 750 points of that was Goldman Sachs. Right? Yeah. I was like, what? I was like, it just surprised me. But it's price weighted, right? So, and you know, financials got a really big bump on that, much bigger than other industries where everything went up, but financials went up a little bit more.
It's approximately seven points for every 1 point. For every 1 point that a Dow component moves, it's 7 points on the Dow Jones Industrial Average using the current divisor. That's why when Intel is about to leave at a low price stock, mm-hmm. and NVIDIA comes in at mm-hmm. a higher price stock, NVIDIA is going to be 6 times more dominating inside of the Dow Jones Industrial Average as compared to Intel.
Yeah, and that's after a split. They should do a reverse split. This way they're like 25 times.
But that's why they do this, so they can get in there. Yep. But that's kind of the game that's being played. Now, think about it. A lot of times these stocks have gone into the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It's almost like the curse of putting your name on a stadium.
Yes.
You go into the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and it's like, okay, well, the run is over. You had your party, and you've entered the, I don't know, the Hall of Fame for stocks in a way, and your game is over.
Yeah.
That's kind of how the Dow Jones Industrial has treated a lot of names in the past. Not all, but there's some speculation about that. Let's talk about the economy now. We know that, well, let's sum this up. Earnings good. Outlook good. Obviously, stock by stock is a better way to look at things. We can't just, you know, put a rubber stamp on all of it. But opportunity is definitely there. Is that your summation?
Yeah, for stocks, opportunity is definitely a yes. Absolutely. You got to be careful. And this is the time to listen to people who know that they're talking about, where in the past, it wasn't really like that. We just buy any stock in any sector, you'll be fine. The market's going higher. It's different. You're seeing the difference, especially in semiconductors, right? You've seen some of these names, some of them are getting annihilated, and others who really focus on AI and are actually not just saying they benefit from AI and are benefiting. Like, you know, I still look at AMD. AMD is not an AI play.
Right? I love
it's
that you brought that up.
It's going to be. It's going to be an AI play where Maybe. Now for the first time, and we told people to avoid this for a while, and I'm glad they did for the last year and a half because it was trading, you know, well over 200. You know, it's now it was 50% of their revenue came from two divisions, which were horrible. They were down like 26%, something like whatever.
They recently did a layoff of a bunch of employees.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of technology companies have, if you look at the last 18 months or 2 years, I mean,
yeah, but you wouldn't expect AMD, which is supposedly going to be the competition NVIDIA that is, you know, roaring and all this with the AI to be laying off people. That just doesn't fit with what the, you know, the notion of an AI company that's rocking.
Yeah. And look, they're a hardware company and NVIDIA is more of a software company. They produce the greatest chips, and yes, but the thing is what this was 10 years in the making, and this is unbelievable what they did, where they're working with every, it's a reason why all these CEOs go up on stage. They're partnering with everyone because they create this moat of software around it. So now you have to use the chips, but the software, which is key because, and they work with every industry and every partner, everyone they work with together, right? So no one likes to do that in technology. Apple hates everybody. Microsoft hates everybody. They hate working together. They don't hate open source. NVIDIA threw that away 10 years ago and said, let's get better relationships. So now it's not hardware. Now you're using a software system. Why is that important? Because as you're building up AI, these guys are still many of them outside of the hyperscalers. It's the foundation needs to be built. So they're building the foundation. Now the foundation is built and then you continue to go to a building, go higher and higher and higher and higher. In order for them to use AMD, they got to knock down a whole foundation. They can't do that because they're going to fall so far behind. And now it's just
a wide moat.
I mean, it's not even why it's unlimited moat that can't be broken. It's right. Just, you know, and AMD is a player in this industry from the hardware side and they're trying software. But now that they're seeing more growth in data centers, now you look instead of 50% of the garbage part of their business, right? Because you're looking at AMD's a pure AI play. Now, the last quarter they reported, which I was interested in looking more at AMD, where you know it's growing so fast. Now the garbage part of it, the other two division, which I think is gaming and whatever it is, something else outside of AI.
It's just chip. It's basic chip.
Yes. So, and chips for PCs and things like that. But you look at that part, it's only 25%. So now that it's starting to become more of an AI play, but you know, to compare them to NVIDIA is just kind of not fair. And you know, you see the spending going on. I don't think people understand the spending going on. I don't know if we want to go here, but this is incredible. So, and I cover this a lot, especially with data center growth and all that stuff. You can go any way you want with that. I've been going crazy with this and going to rabbit holes. But if you're looking at the spending, just this top six hyperscales, you know who they are through Oracle, you know who the other five are if you think about it. The largest, they're spending, I think, $260 billion on CapEx. Mm. And then it's going to $280 and $320 the next 3 years. Now, two things. One, I'll ask you a question. Who do you think is spending the most money out of those companies? Which, you know them, whether it's, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, you know.
Spending the most? Google. I mean, I know it's got to be Facebook.
No.
Meta.
I'm glad you said that because I asked three people and they all got it right. I'm like, I guess everybody knows except for me. Oh. It's Amazon.
Amazon was going to be my second, for God's sakes.
$100 billion. But, you know, you look at at the biggest spenders, I'm thinking Meta, Microsoft, right? Okay. And Google. I just thought like they would be third, but that's the money going. That's the first thing. The second thing, when you look at this trend in AI, everyone, I've heard this for the last 12 months. Oh, be careful. AI is slowing down. Show me evidence. FrankKerseyResearch.com. There's zero evidence. There's not one company that said they're slowing down spending. NVIDIA, I mean, the earnings are for the foreseeable future, but this is the first trend that I've covered. I've been doing this for 30 years and I go to like Consumer Electronics Show every year. I cover trends, everything for the last, you know, 15 years, especially, and I love it. It's one of the only trends that I've seen where you want a trend that scales, and that's fine. But usually there's a limit to that scale. For example, if you have computers, if you have phones, the limit is to how many people exist, right? Or how many people, right? So you start from the beginning this massive scale, but eventually, you know, you can only scale to how many people. Zuckerberg alluded to this. They can't see the end of the scale. They don't know it yet, right? So they just can't see it because it's all a matter of more quicker, more speed, more data, more information. And we're not even scratching the surface yet because we're looking at large language models, right? If you're looking at you know, Anthropic, you're looking at ChatGPT, you know, Claude, Anthropic, and all these things and whatever, Llama. For Meta, that's what we see now. That's nothing. Okay, now
tip of the iceberg.
The inference part is the predictability. And well, that's
inference is that is going to be the fun part.
And that's where they're going to know. I mean, they're ready. It's going to be accelerated by, I think I was watching a game for ESPN. They said, we get, you know, 100 to AWS, we get 150 data points within like, you know, a fraction of a second of any single thing that they're going to put in there of a football game, of a player, but everything that they need to know in like, you know, a tenth of a second. And they continue to spend. And even, I think it was Zuckerberg said this, they're more risk not spending than they are at overspending. Hmm. And there's just no line in sight of them stopping. But at least I don't never forecast longer than 3 years. I mean, we had COVID and the whole market was shut down not too long ago. So you're looking 2 years out, 3 years out. I mean, there's not a company, not one. And you and I cover earnings that said, hey, you know what? We're slowing down our AI spending. Nobody's slowing down because you have to be in this. And it's all about data. Whoever has the data, look at Reddit. I mean, yeah. You see those results?
Yep.
I mean, holy cow. And this is a company, like 20 years internet company, didn't make money. I was like, how's that possible over the cycle of 20 years?
And then all of a sudden they become public and they start making money.
You know why?
Because
I looked at the last quarter.
The data they're selling and using.
Well, so not only, so now they have this massive amount of data, right? People go in, they have conversations. What they did, and I just looked because I was like, holy cow. And I started doing a deep dive on it. And this was a year ago, a year and a half ago. They signed an exclusive deal with Google. And they gave them the keys to the kingdom and said, here's our API. You have access to all of our data. And now Google said, okay. And now you have access to all of our cloud. And now we could throw AI all over this. And that's why now when you do a Google search, if you notice, you have like two sponsors. The first one's always Reddit. And they said there's an explosion in growth because that is such a key component for Google because these are people actually having good conversations back and forth. So more data to analyze. And now that they can analyze this so quickly, they're learning every single thing about you. And it's incredible. Like these names, when you had the data, used to be $5, $7, $10. They're like $300 now. That's how much money they can get because you're targeting. I mean, if you're an advertiser, you used to advertise on the Golf Channel. You have no idea who's watching. I mean, now you could advertise. The return on ad spend is so great and that they have pricing power because you're targeting the exact audience of someone that wants to buy a Kerseyer Research newsletter, that is searching for a newsletter, that in whatever space, the crypto space or the income space, that, you know, recently canceled a news. It's, you know, his, you know, 50,000 names instead of me marketing to a million names. And just the target as that gets faster and faster, really, really is fascinating where we're going with this.
Good stuff. All right. So, economics. From what I can see, looks like, you know, we have a healthy clip of growth. GDP has been good. Employment, 4.1%. Numbers that we saw, I'm going to give the last month's employment report a buy. I'm just going to say we're not going to count that right now due to storms, due to strikes, things of that nature. But, you know, some things are slowing down, but not so much that I still believe the Fed should be cutting aggressively. I've never thought that. I'm still miffed that they cut it all this year, but okay. But where do you think things going from an economic standpoint, real quick?
So you and I have been doing podcasts for how long? How old are we now?
Forever. 15, 17 years?
Yes, right? And you started like probably a little bit before me. I think I'm on 16 years now. the one thing we always get wrong every single time is betting against the U.S. consumer, right?
Oh, yeah, no,
100% of the time. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where they get the money from. Yeah. I have no idea what's going on. Well, it's every single time. Every single time.
Consumer tapped. Retail sales up 9%.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I don't, but, you know, it's, think about, I love the economy because I wish I could teach economics because it's not about bell curves and all this garbage and supply and demand. It, just go look around you, right? And every place that you're looking, you're seeing demand. I mean, people, you want to look at the earnings just came out. Almost every company that I saw, I mean, if you look at Coca-Cola, you look at Disney, you look at every one of them are raising prices still. They're all raising prices, mm-hmm. right? So you do have an inflation component, which is a little scary with the Fed trying to lower rates, right? So I get it. But, you know, I went to a local fair, jammed. I mean, it's $50 for a bracelet to go in these rides. I'm like 100 years old. And there's hundreds of people on them. Hundreds and hundreds of people on them. Like, it's like through the, and these rides, I mean, they're like scary. I mean, they're very scary. I mean, they're very, very old. Everywhere you go to airports, every place I've been traveling a lot. I'm going to New Orleans in a couple of weeks for a conference. Everywhere I go, I'm just looking. I'm like, holy cow. I'm like, just this people spending money. There's people doing so much. They're getting their kids into leagues and all this stuff. And that costs a lot of money.
It's unbelievable.
It really is remarkable. So as long as you're seeing that and another thing too is how are people going to be able to tap the equity in their homes? Because everyone talks about the debt and I think it's like whatever, 70,000 per household. And you have a whole bunch of numbers that people talk about. They have, the average person has over $100,000 in equity per person locked up in the house. But they can't get it out right now. It's very hard because interest rates are higher. So now HELOCs are making a big comeback. But, you know, finding ways to unlock that maybe, you know, it just.
And here's the thing, Frank. Most people.
I don't know.
A lot of people are not as concerned about debt as maybe others. What I mean by that is some people look at debt as like, oh, you know what? I'll take out the money out of my house. Oh, it's 6%. So I'll just pay it off over time. Whereas some people be like, wait. I got this mortgage that I just paid off at 2.5%. I'm done. Why would I ever think about going into a HELOC or any kind of home equity mortgage loan, whatever, and pay 6%? But there's a cadre of people that they don't think
about.
Well,
here's the thing.
They only think about monthly payments.
But here's the thing, Andrew. If you're doing a HELOC, maybe you get it at 9, 10%.
Yep.
But that is huge because a lot of these people are sitting on, you know, tens of thousands, not $100,000 in credit card debt, which is a 25%, right? So that's huge for them to do that. So
yeah, but the problem
I can see them.
Yeah. Hold. You know what happens though?
Oh, I know what happens. I'm just saying that's probably
well,
what
let me
happens.
Let's tell everybody else.
I know the end result.
They pay off the credit cards.
Oh yeah.
They have the debt on the house, and then they rack the credit cards back up.
Yes.
So now they just doubled up on their overall. We're going to take a quick break. I want to talk to you about, I got so much to talk about. We could talk about the data centers and AI and the need for electricity yields. And I definitely want to talk about two things. I'm just going to prep everybody here, get everybody ready. I want to talk about Disney. Mm-hmm. That's something that we've talked about many times in the past. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about Musk, because I got some things I got to talk about, get off my chest. And maybe some of the Trump trade that people have been looking for us to talk about. Hang on one second. And let's talk again about our great sponsor, Interactive Brokers. I want to talk about Portfolio Analyst, which is powered by Interactive Brokers. And what this does is it helps sophisticated investors like you understand the health of their complete financial portfolio. Portfolio Analyst is free and easy to use personal finance software that creates a consolidated view of banking and brokerage and even credit card accounts. You can compare your consolidated portfolio against more than 200 benchmarks or even create customized benchmarks for analyzing performance. You can calculate time and money-weighted rates of returns and use Portfolio Analyst for forecasting. I'm going to say this again. You can sign up for free, F-R-E-E, at PortfolioAnalyst.com. Again, sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. And we're back with Frank Curzio. We were talking about economics earnings, something that's been we've been focusing on because it's coming into the end of the year, 2024. Obviously, 2025 is right around the corner. But I wanted to refocus us on a variety of different topics. This is what's great about Frank and I. We can go anywhere, Frank especially. I mean, I could ask him about, I don't even know, a coffee cake recipe. He'd come up with the answer right here without having to. Everything comes right off, just right out. It's like you're a cauliflower brain of information.
I'm fascinated. I have very good contacts and I just love to learn. So it's not like it's just having good contacts and asking a million questions because, yeah, I love this stuff. And you love it too, right? Yeah, we wouldn't be doing this. It's, you're always learning something new every day.
Of course. So let's talk about quickly a couple of things and we'll get into the Musk commentary, maybe Disney and Trump. So I want to talk about an idea that I've been, you know, mentioning a lot, and this idea of, world issues, the safety trade, gold, Bitcoin, maybe even oil moving all around. Bitcoin, it's a recent all-time high. It moves around, very volatile, as we know. And that's good. I know you're a crypto dude,
mm-hmm.
and that's been good for very, very good for you. Mm-hmm. Gold kind of started rolling down all. I mean, are we headed for a more of a safety trade in all this, or is that just risk on? Has it become a risk on situation?
I think out of every single sector that we cover, the greatest potential for you to make the most money is definitely in crypto.
Hmm.
By far. It's not even close. And I could tell you why, because look what happened before Trump got elected. The market was doing well, right? Pretty much near all-time highs. And yes, they were expensive a little bit, but we are growing earnings and interest rates expect to go lower, right? Cut rates from the Fed easing policies. I get it. Crypto also had that bump. But if you take out Bitcoin and you take out Ethereum, you look at the rest of cryptos. And I'm talking about, I've done a ton of research since the past 5-6 years. 90% of it's garbage. Okay, a lot of these things. I have to read some of these things 3, 4, 5 times to understand them. If you're looking at the next 100 outside of those, a lot of these are still down well off 50, 60% from their highs, right? So yes, they're up and you see them up 30%, 40% from the lows in the past couple of weeks, month or so. But these technologies are fascinating. There's a reason why the last administration went after crypto. I mean, the lobbying dollars behind the banks that went through where they illegally shut 2 banks. And I have the letters and everything of them just out of nowhere in January 2023 that nobody could do business with these banks or we're going to come after you and audit. A whole bunch of letters are all over the place, right? That's what they published. It was this big lobbying. And there's a reason why, because they need the banks to catch up, because it's the only industry I know of in the past 15 years that hasn't been disrupted. Okay, you could say, oh, well, I have online accounts and stuff like that. I'm talking about middlemen and fees, where Amazon, the whole entire retail, and you look across like this competition and what technology has done, where you look at a Goldman Sachs, they create nothing, right? I have friends there. I'm not saying it in a bad way, but they're like, hey, we know a lot of clients. You got an idea? Okay, great. We'll meet you here. You're paying us 6%. Not only are you paying us 6%, we're going to come out with a roadshow. You got to pay us for the consulting. And once we launch, we're going to get shares, warrants. We can dump whatever we want. And plus, after that, we're going to make more money because we're going to have our research firm 1 month later also cover you. All conflicts of interest. Who cares? But now within crypto, and you have a Trump win, and he ran, right? And he did perfect because he didn't like crypto and he switched well before Kamala. And why did she switch? Because of the money. That's why they both switched. That's why all politicians, that's what it's about, right? We all know that. Mm-hmm. I don't care what side you're on. So now you have Trump. Now you're going to have an actual legal framework around this. And the amount of money that's going to pour into this is absolutely insane. And you're going to see it. So
you start more, to see it now. More now
than
when the ETFs came out?
Everyone that's under 50 years old or pretty much under 45, 50 years old grew up in a digital age. Okay, this is their gold, right? Yeah, I mean, and not only that, there's a limited supply when it comes to Bitcoin. As Bitcoin goes higher, these other technologies are fascinating. For example, if you look at a company, Chainlink, right? Chainlink, what they do is when you hear about, oh, crypto's terrible, all these hacks, the hacks occur because the blockchains are separate. They don't talk to each other. So you have a bridge. If you want to transfer something from one to the other, and where you have that bridge, that's when the hackers come in and steal it, not when it's on a blockchain. So blockchain's almost, impossible to hack. Now with Chainlink, it managed to have these things communicate with each other, which is why the SWIFT system, which is the biggest banks in the world, are mm-hmm. actually using Chainlink. That's fascinating to me. Now you have these things that could transfer money much faster. It's much quicker than regular banks. I just did a capital raise for our company. We raised $2.5 million in a couple of weeks because we're doing very well and we're growing, right? That's strictly for growth. And the bank that we use, which is a mid-tier bank, and we're switching, charges us wire fees. $30 here, $30 there, $30 here. I'm like, why are you charging us fees for? Why are you charging? And they all charge these fees, these massive fees, where using crypto and a transfer of payments and how quick it can, you get money across. It's from country to country. It's unbelievable what these technologies could do. Data centers where you have, Bitcoin mining companies, which is an unscalable business, meaning you have to spend more in order to make more money, right? Now they're renting out space using crypto to rent out that space for data centers who want to use their NVIDIA chips that they're using to mine for Bitcoin. and they're actually able to use these technologies through blockchain to rent out their existing space. Why would they do that? Because you get much higher rates. Like 1 gigawatt is worth $500,000. 1 megawatt's worth $500,000 on the Bitcoin side. If you go to the data center side and change that to like, it's called that two technical tier three assets, it's worth $5 million, right? So, I mean, the technology behind what this does in blockchain is fascinating. And now you're going to see that develop tremendously, because before this, the definition of a security was something that you would buy. It's an asset that you own that you think you're going to make money on that you're promoting through a third party. Okay. That makes Jordan sneakers basically an asset, right? I could buy them. I think they're going to go higher and I'm going to promote them on eBay to sell them. They could say, Frank, that's an asset and come in and close me down. Right. And the reason why they do that and they make it vague, it allows the SEC to go after anyone they want. And they even went after Coinbase, who went through the SEC process and got approved by the SEC to actually go public. Right. And they even went after them. So now you're not going to have that anymore. And even Novogratz, who's left, big Democrat supporter, I mean, but he has Galaxy Digital, which is a company that's fascinating to me, one of the biggest in the space. They've been trying to get a NASDAQ listing for 4 years and they couldn't get it. Now they're going to get a NASDAQ listing. This is a company that has tremendous upside potential. Former Goldman Sachs executive, they're taking custody now. All this stuff used to have to be done overseas. Now it could be done in the U.S. He even said every day for the next 2 years, all you're going to see is positive news come out on crypto. And this is an industry, not like the market, that's up a ton and went up even more. There's names, good names in the top 100 that are down tremendously. And plus, I think you told me to buy one of them. What was that name? I forgot.
Me?
It was called. Yeah, what was the name of that? Uh-oh. I actually forgot it. You don't remember?
Was it Shiba Inu?
Because there's a lot of meme names that go crazy and everything.
Dogecoin?
But,
I don't know.
No, I think it was a Peanut.
Me? I told you? I don't think so.
No, you should have told me that. So I was just joking. So there's like memes and craziness, but it's this is a name called Peanut the Squirrel. It's called.
That's Peanut. The coin.
Yep, that's the coin.
And what does it do?
$2 billion market cap. It's up 1,300% in a week.
Yes.
Do you remember telling me about that?
Oh, gosh. That's crazy.
So that's the craziness behind it, right, with crypto. If you have $1,000 to lose and you want to play with that, who am I to tell you no? I'm going to tell you you're an idiot for generating 10,000% returns, whatever you want to do. What I'm saying is a lot of names in this space that you can make 5X on, 7, 10X on still, and you can't really make those gains in the market anymore because one, not only are they high, but even the companies that IPO at these insane valuations where most of the growth is priced in.
Let me go quickly over to, you mentioned the SEC. Elon Musk tweeted recently something like, I hate the SEC, something like that. The SEC sucks. The SEC is no good. He's going to be very involved, at least we see at this point, with the Trump administration, even though the Trump administration the team is seemingly trying to end the $7,500 EV tax credit, which is going to be
great
interesting.
Great for Tesla.
It's great for Tesla?
It eliminates the rest of the competition.
Right. It does eliminate the rest of the competition. And who knows if, in fact, they're going to reinstate a credit for cars that are built here.
Good point.
You follow what I'm saying? Which would be double good for Tesla, but still not great because it's still good that he had the 7,500 opportunity.
Oh, he built the whole company on that. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So what's interesting though, is he hates the SEC. I mean, one of the things that really fascinates me is, doesn't he realize that the SEC is in charge of the financial markets, we'll call it, and the rules or regulations around that, and how he made his wealth was from sitting his company on the investment platform that the SEC is created? Am I missing something?
I don't think you're missing anything. But I think if you look more in tune with what he's saying is he hates who's running the SEC. Because if you look who's running the SEC, there's a clear agenda. I mean, we have two people where it comes to Elizabeth Warren and you know, it's Gensler. I mean, they're attacking crypto for no reason. They go after companies. They've been going after him like crazy, especially with Twitter, just because he took over Twitter. I mean, is really Elon Musk a threat to national security? Is this a guy you really want to turn off and cancel? Like one of the brilliant minds? You could hate his guts, but I mean, they try to make it as hard as possible to not make these cars, and everybody fought them, including all lobbying dollars from the auto companies. And then all of a sudden now all the auto companies want to become, you know, electric. Right.
And most failing miserably at it.
And most failing miserably at it. I mean, this guy, it's catching rockets. I mean, you want to unleash someone like that, whether you like him or not. You want to, you know, control him and not go crazy. But I mean, they were attacking him. And I think that's why you saw a big result in this election where listen, I know lots of Democrats, right? And I'm a registered Republican and I'm not crazy right or anything like that. But you know what? I mean, we never argued. We argued over the same things. We debated over, okay, you tax the rich a little bit more, climate change, you know, abortion's always going to be on the table. You never argued about the safety of your children, right? I mean, that was never on the table. I mean, it just went so far to the left. And even now they're seeing it. You can even, you know, when you have guys like JFK, who's a Democrat, Joe Rogan, a Democrat, they're Democrats that actually not only moved over to conservative, but not conservative, but, you know, more to the right, but they started promoting Trump. That's how bad it was, right? I mean, so you know, when you have that and all that craziness, I just think he's getting his feelings out. But you got to be disappointed with the SEC because, they're going after companies with no rhyme or reason so bad, especially within crypto, that the Supreme Court had to come down and say, what are you guys doing? Whenever you find, there has to be a due process. You can't have your own judges and just find these guys where there's no due process. And they basically said, you guys nuts. So it went so far over where you want the SEC, well, that's you what want
happens.
Them to govern.
That's what happens. Pendulums swing. And there was a time when they would swing back and forth. Now they're going way outside the range, left, right. When I say left to right, I don't mean politically, but whatever it is, moving this way like crazy. And then all of a sudden everybody's freaking out. Oh my God, why are we going back? Because you know what? You went too far. You went too far.
Yeah.
And that's some of the things that are happening.
You know, I'll give you a little rant here the reason why I started my company, right, is I want to help individual investors. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not a joke. My dad does this, my late dad for 30 years. That's what I love, right? Because I worked on Wall Street and the retail investor gets effed every single time.
Every time.
Every single time, no matter what. And people ask me, well, you know, what do you mean by that? I mean that if Wall Street's going to take everything from you, if you're laying there and you have a sock on, Wall Street's going to take that stock and shove it down your throat. Okay. That's Wall Street. That's what they do to you. Okay. To the retail investor, every single time they dump everything on them. Right. So now you have crypto, which may be the first industry I've ever seen that outsmarted Wall Street. Because retail investors were in that, kids were in that longer and look where it is. Right. And now all of a sudden I feel like they're playing catch up, but the SEC's job, and they say, we want to protect the investor. And they're going after so many of these. If you really wanted to protect the investors, because we operate in an industry that you rob people and it's perfectly fine. And you don't get punished ever. I mean, the credit crisis, you don't get punished, right? You look at SPACs. Pull up a chart, please, at Google. This is amazing. Okay. If you look at the average SPAC and what they return, they're all down 90-95%. What are SPACs?
We had some people that were the SPAC barkers. You look at how in a world that they're protecting investors, do you have credit cards at 22%, 25%, 30%?
I mean, if you really, your job is to protect investors, you would invest, you would basically arrest 75% of the companies that issue SPACs. I mean, Chamath, who I like.
Smart guy, but bad execution.
If you're looking at, I mean, the space company, right? If you're looking at they're like, oh, we're all going to space. Everyone's going to space. It's great. And all he ran the stock up. He's on New York Stock Exchange across the street. He used to work there. He's like, hey, this building that was actually, you know, historic. I don't even know how they got it. They're on the roof, right? Him and Richard Branson, right? So Virgin Galactic. Yeah, we're going to space, everything. They ran the freaking stock price up. They sold that $300 million, $500 million they made. And the thing is broke. And they're not going to get a rocket. They're not going to get anything up. You know, they were on TV saying it's a value play. So people don't realize, oh, everything comes out of 10. But most investors who don't know better don't understand that the valuation is different. It's not the stock price is 10, but depending on how many shares and some of these things that were trading for like in a private markets for, you know, $400 million came out $7 billion valuations and they came out $10. And then they were doing pipe deals, giving all these guys shares at $1, $1.50, $2, $3. Doesn't matter if the thing goes down to 7, all these guys are making money. It only works if you're able to dump the story onto the retail investors.
That's
and destroy them.
It's take the junk and dump.
And then, and the SEC is like, we want to protect the investors. Really, really want to protect the investors. Yeah. So I see that point. Not to, you know, sorry about the rant, but whether you're on.
All right. No, I get it. Let's quickly talk about Disney. Now, finally getting its groove back. Let me give you some things that happened recently, a couple of weeks back, a week back or so. Had a good earnings report. Much of the good news was the benefit of the streaming service. In fact, streaming was hot. It's a banner quarter for the theatrical film business. CEO Bob Iger called it one of the best quarters in the history of our film studio, in fact, although it's still contending with some, the company, macro-related headwinds, I would say, due to the theme park business. Also, it did perform better than anticipated, which was good. It was a beat. It was a bullish outlook. There was, even though there's slowdown in domestic leisure travel demand, it coupled with a downturn in international theme park business, did in fact weigh on the Q4 earnings. But Operating income fell 6%. Again, essentially in line. But CEO Bob Iger was pretty upbeat and stock responded. Comments?
You know, I was trying to get excited because I've been negative and really right on this. And if someone's listening to me the first time, like, wow, this guy Frank sounds arrogant. I'm not being arrogant because I talk about my losers more than my winners. But this is one that at 180, 170, looking at the numbers, average revenue per user, you know, what they did, how they were lying to you. They were telling you that, you know, subscription is growing. Oh, and yet,
was, yeah, that was bad.
You did the whole entire, from 20, but the thing is, there's like 35 analysts that cover it. And these guys at 180, 170, 150, 130, 120, all the way down to 90, still had buy ratings on it, right? So if you're looking where it is right now, oh my God, it's a great quarter. And I have nothing personal against Disney. You know, it's an entertainment company. I like Disney. It's just, the story never made sense for me. So now they transition, they bring Iger in, they cut costs tremendously. I'm like, okay, maybe they'll get around to maybe this is a buy. This stock is at 110 right now, around 110. And when you look at where it was, pretty much in February 2020, right before COVID, it was at 140. Okay, almost every single stock, if you're looking at S&P 500, it's higher than that. It's higher than that COVID, pre-COVID price, right before the crash. This company's still down. I look at this number, you just said something interesting. The theatrical, right, is great. They had record, right? You're talking about in 2024, this is a company that barely grew, right? So advertising is only growing 3%. How's that possible? The streaming, they say they're still focused on growing subscribers. No kidding. Good job. And they said they plan to raise prices. Okay, you're raising prices. They launched ESPN. They're going to launch ESPN. They're so excited about it that they're not telling us the pricing. The ESPN pricing is probably going to be $30 a month. I have no idea how they're going to sell that thing. That's why they're not announcing the pricing, even though they're so excited about it. Again, I was looking for something positive. The stock did a little pretty good, but the numbers, listen, 2025, promising slate of movies, that's good. But they're only targeting single-digit earning per share growth.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that's a big deal. It's 4%. You're going to read the headlines. It's high percent. If you look at the number they put out there, it's 4% growth. That's not
which
good.
Which is better than the 4%, the 6% decline they took.
Yes, but the stock's trading at 24 times forward earnings. That's a premium to the overall market.
The problem with Disney is it's not the Disney of what it was. They don't have the new ideas. They don't have the innovation. It's and much of what they do is just part one, part two, right? You know, they're taking
focusing on something. Their growth engine, okay, they're going still all in on streaming, okay, and they cannot compete in streaming. They can never compete in streaming. Okay, they made it profitable. Okay, they made it profitable. Why? Because streaming is all about new content. All right, you don't buy Disney because you're going to watch Dumbo 40 times. I'm sorry. Okay, it's all about new content. Like yeah. Netflix comes out with a new show. I got to see it, right? I mean, you'd see, you know, Penguin on Max. Oh my God, I got to see it. It's the only platform. All of their great content comes out in the movies first, and then it comes out in their platform. And now they're not really producing a ton of original content. That's why. So now what's going on with them? They have a streaming service where they're not spending a lot of new content, but yet they're throwing ads all over it and they're going to raise prices. It's an unsustainable business strategy. And that's their growth model, which scares me. So you're looking at Disney, Hulu, you know, raising prices. And they said, wow, we were surprised. We're able to raise prices. And we thought we were going to see more subscribers go off the list. You know why subscribers are going to go off the list? Because it's literally impossible to cancel the subscription. You can't find it. They won't let you find it. You can't call anybody. They don't let you until now where they just passed the law in about 6 months.
Yep.
It's going to be one click. You're going to see a lot of subscribers come off this. I just don't know what the growth model is.
I can't wait
for
that
company.
Because I'm so sick of these Columbia Record Club tactics.
Columbia Record Club. Yeah, it's Columbia Record Club. It's great. Great analogy. I love it. I couldn't do better.
Let's just take 2 minutes, which probably needs an hour on its own, talk about the Trump trade. So we had the recent election, of course. Analysts are assessing, you know, what sectors and, you know, where we could benefit from all this. What places will have challenges? We know the first thing I thought of was, oh boy, there goes the solar. There goes the alternative energy. There goes the renewables, which it did. So there was a list that we kind of worked on, did some research, came up with, and something that we'll talk about some of it. But do you find there's any particular area, whether it's, I don't know, coal and steel or defense or private prisons? What cryptocurrency, which we talked about, so we'll leave that off. You know, is this going to be as big for the banking and deregulation everybody's thinking? I mean, we saw Bank of America go up like 8-9% of the day of election that week was like 12%.
Yeah. I mean, regulation is going to be good for these guys. They have so much capital on their balance sheets, they don't know what to do with it. And it's just being held, right? So now, you know, if you lower the requirements at tier one requirements, it's going to result in more capital that, you know, that they can lend out, which is good. But I think that's factored into a lot of it. I would look, renewable energy is interesting because what happens is you see an entire sector crash. Like I said, it should, right? Okay, they're not, you know, pro climate change. But when I look at a company, First Solar is doing it right. They're good, right? It's a good name. It's a good company. It's $4 billion in sales they generate and $19 billion market cap, strong margins. Now it got annihilated along with the rest of the sector where it shouldn't have got annihilated as much, I think. I want to look into it a little more. It's trading at 9x forward earnings. You know, so some companies, there's some solar companies that can make it work economically. Most of them can't. And that's we, you know, for us, we try to see those disconnects of where we can go. You know, when I look at biotech, small cap biotech has still, I mean, that's an area that's gotten annihilated. I think you're going to see more funding with a risk on trade.
That would make a lot of sense, actually. With you have, that's an interesting thing. You have an aging population. We have maybe a more friendly FDA. Maybe we have less regulation there. And then more importantly, I think, the access to capital, which is always important for the small cap biotechs, right?
Yes. And you're seeing good technologies get funded where people are like, well, you know, it's hard to raise capital. It's hard to raise capital if you don't have a good story and you know, good technology. But it's not hard to raise capital where, what is it? Is it ChatGPT? Didn't they just raise $6.5 billion in like a week? Yeah. Right. So you know, it's... You snap your finger, exactly. Defense is obviously great. They got to build it up, and Trump likes to spend a ton of it on it, right? So that's a good industry. However, I wouldn't go into the bigger names. For the very first time, which we've seen, and some of our best winners, I mean, AVAV, right, which is great with drones. We're up about 800%, almost 800% on that, and that's since 2017. We never really held a position that long, but you know, reevaluating it, I still think it's going to go higher from here. And also when you look at Palantir, and people look at Palantir and say, it's the most expensive stock. They've been saying it's expensive for how long?
No, it has not. That's what they were so wrong about that.
And the reason why they're wrong is I could tell you, when you have the CEO of Chevron go on stage, not being paid and going on with the CEO of Palantir saying what they did for our company transformed everything for us through their AI systems, where we're seeing efficiencies that we've never seen in over 100 years of this business. Okay, that's what you're getting out of Palantir, where it's not just the defense companies, and these are independent. That's where I was going. Like the independent defense companies are starting to really catch fire, where that wasn't really an industry because the big guys were just like, you know, yeah, it was so hard and you know, the bureaucracy and cutting through the red tape. Now you have these companies outside that are doing very well, and Palantir, I think, could go a lot higher. Is it expensive? Yes, but you got to look at the growth, guys.
If anybody knows what they do from the, and by the way, this is only more recently. For a while, I was a cold on them. Mm-hmm. And then we bought it for our clients, and we've been trimming a little bit off because our gains have been beautiful on Palantir.
I don't go into a full position right now, but if you're going to go buy a little bit and then scale into it over time. But this is a name that, I mean,
there's some fascinating sides they have, and there's some deep pockets that could fund them. And with all that, as good as they're doing, how successful they are, Alex Karp, the CEO, quick question on him. What's with the hair?
I don't know what's with the hair, but man, he's the most entertaining, entertaining quarterly conference calls, man. That guy just goes off on everybody. And
he has some hair.
He does have some hair.
I mean, that's that's not even like hair, like, oh, I slept on it all night and this is what it looks like. He has hair at a different level.
Listen, I think it's 70%. Don't quote me on this. I'm pretty sure that's some kind of crazy number. 70% of the investors in Palantir are retail investors. Good for them. Yep. Because everyone's been saying, this is expensive. Get rid of it. Single digits. What is it? 50? 45, 50, whatever it is?
60.
Is it 60 now?
I think it's 60.
That's amazing. I mean, we're up a lot on it. We've done very, very well with it. Yep. That was a good name that we did great. So, yeah.
Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. We're going to put all the information on the ways that you can get in touch with him because his newsletters are fabulous. He also is the host of Wall Street Unplugged. But we'll have all that. Frank, also slowly, how can people get in touch with you?
If you want to get in touch with me, go to Curzio Research. You can email me direct, frank@curzioresearch.com. Or listen, our podcast is free. And we have a very good podcast. We have great guests on. We cover a lot of stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's growing tremendously fast now, which is thank you so much for everyone that does listen to it and pass it on. It's going out to 120 countries now. It gets downloaded. So it's really, really cool.
That's great.
And I know you're seeing that growth as well, too. Yeah. So it's podcasts.
120 countries. I don't know about that, but yeah. Hmm. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have 118.
I don't know why. I still can't figure out why. I can't figure out why, but hey, if people want to listen to me, listen to me. That's me. I'm not going to change. I'm going to talk fast. That's me. What am I going to do? I have a little bit of a New York accent.
Thank you so much. Have a happy, healthy new year. Love to the family. And I'll see you soon.
All right. You got it. Love you, man. Thanks, buddy.
Bye. Well, that's a lot of ground covered. I told you. I warned you. I said we're going to go fast and furious. And when Frank is on and I get together, it is just a talk fest, a schmooze fest, a fun fest. Like I said, we talk about a lot of different things, a lot of different areas. Hopefully you got a lot out of that. You gained some knowledge on the different topics that we talked about and some of the things that are going to be working, all the stocks that we mentioned. I got, 20 different names that I think we talked about, inclusive of some off-stock items like Chainlink. We talked about with regard to the crypto space out there. So with that, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. You have a wonderful, wonderful few days and maybe spend some time off, watch some football, spend some time with the family. And we're going to be back next week with another great guest. This one's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to tease you here, but it's going to be someone who we've never had before, but someone we've had their company on before. It's an area of finance that we don't talk about much, but we're going to leave it there. I'm going to let you come back wanting for more on the Disciplined Investor podcast. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out all the things that are available there. Of course, listen to DH Unplugged each and every week with myself and John C. Dvorak. We spend time talking about all things related to markets and sometimes off markets. Thank you so much. I'm thankful for you. Hopefully you're thankful for all the things that are coming great your way these days, and hopefully thankful for you and your family. I'll see you again next week.
Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.
Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.